Hello, rich girls. Welcome back to Old Money, the podcast to help you build the trust fund you wish you were born with. I'm your host, Amber Evenson. Happy freaking holidays. I hope you woke up today and you were like, what day is it? Where am I? I don't even know what's going on. To me, there is nothing more elite than waking up and not knowing what country you're in or what time zone you're in or what luxury hotel you're in or what day you're on, because that really tells me that you're just living your life, baby. You are moving through it. And we are about to get into 2026. This is an episode that I've actually never done before. I'm doing something different this year because if you go back, I mentioned this on last week's episode, which was the three ways that I'm prepping for 2026. It was more about like things that you could be doing to optimize this one. Sit back and relax, baby. You don't have to do anything here except muscle your mind, because I'm getting into 10 predictions for 2026. And these are not hard and fast predictions like what celebrities I think are going to break up or die or get married or whatever. These are more about 10 cultural trends that I'm identifying early to help you respond to the world, not react. I believe that a little bit of preparation and a little bit of foresight can help us become emotionally regulated, because when things happen, we're like, oh yeah, I've kind of thought about that once or twice before. If you're a busy gal like me, it can be hard to even sit back and like think about things. So I've actually been thinking about this for like 8 weeks of like, what the heck is going on in the world? And what do I think is coming in 2026? And the reason that I call out that I'm doing a different kind of episode this year, I've never done anything like this before, but typically I was doing an end of year, how I spent my money recap for you all, and then also going through my journaling exercise, which I do every single year. I've been doing it for 2018, so I think that's like 7 years now, and maybe even longer than that, where I answer the same set of questions every single year to see how I've grown. These questions are available for you if you want to do the annual expansion exercise in the Old Money Country Club. There's a link in the show notes, and there's how many questions? I don't know. They're bullet pointed, not numbered. Maybe like 20 questions. And the reason this is so important to me isn't the reason I answer the same questions every single year, is because it helps you see your growth. A quick note on that, Dan Sullivan, you know I love him. He's the one that coined the five types of wealth. He also has this whole point about living in the gap versus living in the gain. People who are stuck in the gap are measuring themselves against where they think they should be, which is an ever-moving target. So you can always feel behind. You never really reach it. It's a mindset that kind of erodes confidence because it keeps you focused on what's missing versus what you've accomplished. As you get to 1 million in net worth, you're like, okay, now I need to get to 2 million in net worth. Now you're at 2 million, now I need to get to 5 million. And you're always in the gap. You have some place to go. However, if you are a person that can live in the gain, you're the type of person who can look backwards instead of forwards and measure your progress from where you started. And that shift creates an immediate sense of expansion and abundance and like, look what I did. This is so great. Because rather than feeling less than based on where you want to go, you're recognizing how much you've grown. So every year I answer these 20 or so questions to reflect back and say, how did I grow? What did I do? This is now just a part of my routine, and I've recorded a couple episodes where I go through my answers to the question with you, but this year I decided not to record that episode. I'll get back to why in a second. The other episode I used to do every single year was the how much money did I spend, where did my money go episode. Of course, they still exist in the podcast archives, so you can go back so that you can hear how I talk about what I did with my year, money-wise, the goals that I set, the benchmarks that I had, what percentage of what went to what, all that kind of stuff, because I want to have those conversations and normalize them with the audience, with you guys that are listening here, so that you can start to adopt that language and mindset as well. However, as you probably heard if you listened to last week's episode, I switched money management systems this year, which I didn't do a great job, so I don't have those numbers readily available. So number one, it's still on my to-do list to kind of do an end of year wrap up. But number two, because as I shared in last week's episode, I changed my money management system to be a little bit less intense and less labor intensive from me of like sitting on spreadsheets and managing things, because I want my brain power to go into a more expansive, more growth-oriented way, more forward-looking than just managing what's already happened. As I shared, all of that energy going towards categorizing and making my spreadsheet perfect was fine, but I want to evolve, I want to grow. And I believe that the old money management way should be less about spending so much time in reviewing what's already happened and more about what's going to happen in the future. So my money dates on a month-to-month basis now are less about how much I spent, where the budget is, and more about where can I optimize my investments? What can I read? What do I need to learn? What's coming next? And in that theme, instead of doing the annual expansion exercise episode, instead of doing a what I spent in the year episode, I want you and I to look forward into 2026. I want to look at what's happening now, what we think might be coming, so that we can respond to culture, not react to headlines, so that we can maybe make adjustments or start thinking of things now, as opposed to when it's already a trend that somebody's talking about on TikTok. So today I have 10 different, they're predictions. There's things that I think are happening in these different categories. They're not necessarily like hard and fast, like I think the S&P is going to hit this or Bitcoin's going to get back up to 120,000. It's more about what's happening in culture, and I'm covering everything from aesthetics and fashion to politics, wellness, work, status, kids, all the things. So I'm really excited. I think 2025 has been, well, for me personally, it's been a huge year. It's been a huge growth year. I got married this year. I also went through a huge, the word that just came to mind was ego death, and that's just so masculine and like spiritual woo-woo bullshit, but if you took my course, Old Money Mindset, and you heard all the background drama on how insane this year was between getting married, all of the background on the prenup, all of the family drama, I spill all the tea in Old Money Mindset. So if you just, by the way, if you need more to listen to over the holiday break, go listen to Old Money Mindset because it's a lot of really good stuff. And also it's pretty entertaining because my life was crazy this year. But the ego death, I went through a huge awakening around emotional regulation and how much that had been negatively, or my lack thereof, had been negatively impacting every area of my life, most importantly, my relationship. So it was a fantastic year, an expansive year, an amazing year, but it was also a very hard year for me personally. I think a lot of people have been expressing that 2025 was a hard year. As they say in numerology, it was the year of the snake. The snake is shedding its skin. It's making way for the fire horse in Chinese zodiac starting in February of next year. They also reference back to the fact that the numerology of 2025 is a 9 year, meaning it's a completion year. Next year is a 1 year, meaning that it's a fresh start, all the things, whatever meaning you assign to it. I want to get away from, and this is my hope for the world, this trope that I think has been continued since 2020, where everybody looked back at 2020 and they were like, it was a dumpster fire, like hurry up 2021, get here. But I feel like people have just been keeping a hold of that trope and continuing to assign that every year has been shit since then. Like it was normalized to do that in 2020 because that was a fucking anomaly of a year. There was a pandemic, everybody was stuck at home. It was weird. But 2020 was one of the best years of my life. It's the year that I adopted Poppy. It's the year that I adopted Justin. So it was a great year for me. And it's the same thing. How can we change the mindset? Even if it was a challenging year, I know that there's meaning you can assign to it. And for me, that mindset shift has been huge. It's given me the space to, instead of just ruminating on all the things that were hard, looking at the meaning and looking at where I'm going into the future. That is the evolution of the old money mindset. Instead of being reactive and responsive and looking backwards, which we're going to do to see how far we've come, we're going to start also looking expansively. We're growing, we're predicting, we're looking at trends, and we're making better decisions for them. So with all of that preamble, we're almost 10 minutes into the show. You're like, Amber, shut up, get to the point. Let's jump into these 10 different categories of things that I think are coming, are changing, are going to be different in 2026. The first one is all about aesthetics and culture and lifestyle. I believe that we are moving out of the quiet luxury phase. Now, not totally completely, because staples always work, basics always work. We're not going back to really large, loud brands, but I think we're going into a season of more adornment in fashion. What I was reading in a couple of publications is that the media around fashion coverage is already hinting at this like aesthetic shift away from just pure minimalism, quiet luxury, towards more bolder or clearer points of view. Like if you saw the Chanel show with their new creative director this year, there was definitely some creativity there. There was definitely some embellishment, creativity. There was different bag concepts. It was more about having something that was special because I kind of feel like we've reached critical mass of all of the people getting the basics. Everybody has the Birkin. Everybody has the Kelly. And I think that's why we started to see the Labubus pop up in 2025 because people needed something to add onto their bag to make it different. And not just a Twilly, not just the little horse charm, but like people want to differentiate themselves now. So I think that we all have the basics set. And now style is going to be about what can you get that's unique, that's you, that can feel like a luxury lift, that feels a little bit more personalized and like personal style versus just quiet luxury. I think in this too, people's relationships with brands will evolve to kind of like going from dating your essay to being in a relationship and more about brand appreciation and history and relationship instead of just getting all of the trendy goods. Like you're going to see the Aubrey Peters of the world like really lean into their Pucci era and Miu Miu era because that's like their brand now, where you have the Lydia Millins of the world, and I know she sold all her Birkin bags, but she's going into that very equestrian English countryside type of a vibe. And it's all about brand appreciation and craft and relationship. I'll give you a really good example. Becca Bloom, she has the Christoph silverware set. Like that is a moment. It's a memory. It's her thing. She has Van Cleef like as her family's brand. I feel like we're going to see a lot more of that, of really getting into craft and storytelling of the heritage brands to kind of justify your brand loyalty, if that makes sense. Because you can't just be luxurious by having a Birkin bag anymore. You have to have something that's more unique and different and whatever. And that's why even people like Kathy Hilton were putting a stupid Labubu on their Birkin bag. But, you know, you get the point. Also in this same vein, the way that I think that people are going more towards like customization and personal style or whatever else, I think we're going to see this in travel as well, because I think we're going to have another big Euro summer. But I also think that people are branching out into more specificity on their travel experiences, because you can't just go to Jandal every single time you go to Ibiza and have the exact same experience. You want to have another villa party. You want to be on a yacht. You want to do something that's super unique. You want to be behind the stage with black coffee, whatever it is that you want to do. I think that high-end travelers are going to be prioritizing being super well cared for in these like seamless logistics. I mean, the standards for travel are getting higher and higher. I already talked about it, but the Air France premiere documentary is so incredible. It really gives you a look into what the expectations are for that super high-end traveler. Even like Delta 360, getting picked up from your terminal in a Porsche and being driven to the plane so you don't have to wait in lines. I think that people are going to be looking for opportunities to be away from crowds. They want slower itineraries. They want more cultural immersion. Again, the same way Becca Bloom's got her like Christoph silverware, a perfect gift for her would be what we talked about on the Neiman Marcus catalog, like going to the Christoph store, seeing how they forge the silver into your forks or whatever it is. It's more about indulgences in fashion or travel or lifestyle that aren't necessarily quiet luxury, but they're heritage or they have some sort of justification, some specialty, some personal style, something that really feels unique to people. I think that's what we're going to be seeing. Less look at me because I'm wearing a really big brand or logo, because now so many things are counterfeit, and more about like, I really embody the lifestyle. So aesthetically, culturally, and lifestyle, we're going to have a Euro summer. We're going to have a lot of discretionary spending from people who are very well off. But I think the focus is going to be more on specialty pieces, indulging in things that are really meaningful to you or your family and your personal style for more adornment, more specialty, less mass market stuff. And I am calling a Birkin mass market. I know it's crazy, but that's what I really think is going to happen in 2026. So since we're talking about money, we might as well get into the emotional climate of money that I think is coming in 2026. So just kind of looking at 2025 as a whole, it was kind of a slow year as it relates to business and the economy in general. Everybody was like, are we in a recession? Are we not in a recession? What's going on? But honestly, even though the market ripped in 2025, nothing really popped off. And so, you know, the market did really well in 2025, mostly because the tech companies and the AI boom, like Nvidia, are supporting the growth of like the entire S&P 500, of the entire stock market in general. But if you look at the rest of the tech companies, there was a lot of layoffs. If you look at things that were influencing politically the rest of the economy, I mean, interest rates were super high. So in my industry, in construction, not a lot of new projects got started. Not a lot of new businesses were started in a meaningful way because it was more expensive to get money. Less people are buying and selling homes because, again, it's expensive to get a mortgage. And a lot of people are trying to keep their 2.5% interest rate protected and locked. It seems like a million years ago, but it was just April of this year when all of the tariffs were announced, which was hugely terrifying for small business owners that make their products overseas. We didn't really see the trickle-down effect of that until a couple of weeks later, months later, but some companies are absorbing the cost. Some things are getting more expensive. So inflation's up, people aren't spending as much money. The consumer is generally pretty soft, even though Black Friday, there was a lot of spending on credit cards and Klarna, but that's another conversation. And then also with the political influence of the deportations and the craziness of the ICE raids and all the things that were happening, a lot of the industries that are affected by immigrant labor, like farming, like restaurant workers, things like that, people have been scared. They have been leaving their jobs. There has been an increase in the cost of labor because when a lot of those immigrants leave, whether forcefully by the disgusting ICE agents or because of their own fear, there are less people to do the jobs that need to be done at a low cost. I hate to say it, but that's the way the real world works. And so this whole year has been just weird, like an anomaly of sorts of like, again, the stock market is ripping and people who are engaged in the stock market and own assets and own equities, they're doing better than ever. And the people that are not engaged in the equities and not buying stocks and not participating, they're more disenfranchised than ever. That's why we saw an actual like communist idealistic leader in New York City get elected as a mayor. Because a lot of young people are feeling disenfranchised. They're seeing things like the rich get richer and I get poorer. Things get more expensive for me. Like, I want the government to come in and regulate. Unfortunately, we have history to show us that communist regimes literally never, ever work. Sorry, it doesn't work. So the whole rhythm of the year economically has been weird because of all of these different factors, and yet the stock market's ripping, nothing really popped off, and then we thought that Bitcoin was going to continue to grow, and it totally tanked. So what are people going to do next year? Well, prices are probably going to continue to go up because of immigration reform and tariffs. Labor's more expensive, everything's more expensive, and so whatever restaurant you go to or store you go to or whatever you're buying from, they're passing that cost on to the consumer. I also think consumer debt is going to continue to spiral out of control. Like, we have more credit card debt than ever on an individual basis, but I think next year we're going to start to see a lot more bankruptcies and a lot more foreclosures start to happen. I also think car repossession numbers are an early indicator of when people stop paying their bills and worse things are to come. I think people are going to continue to be really angry that they're not earning more, that life is getting even more expensive, that society is evolving super fast, and they're going to feel left behind because they're going to sit and be in a victim mentality of the rich are getting richer and I'm not. And the thing about it is that if we look back at, let's say, like the Industrial Revolution, or when we stopped using, you know, child labor in factories, or people in Detroit were, you know, guaranteed pensions and all of these things for working in a car factory and could have a house. And then that changed over a generation and it was disappointing to people and people were upset. Like, well, my dad worked in a factory and got a pension and like, I wanted to do the same thing and now I can't. Now I'm mad that Detroit wasn't the city that it once was. Well, they had a whole generation to adjust to that. And I think that the AI boom is happening 4 times, 5 times faster than that ever would. So people are sitting back and being like, oh, I'm so pissed. All these people that are inventing and working on AI are getting so mad and like, I'm going to be out of a job. Yet they are not doing anything to evolve as quickly as the economy is evolving, as quickly as culture is evolving. I honestly don't think people will adjust their behaviors. I don't think people will try to continue to get educated and stay competitive in the job market. I see a lot of people thinking that they went to college and that they're done being educated and they should just be promoted through their life without having any growth or new education added to the mix. It's just not how things are going to work anymore. There's new technology, there's new opportunities. And if you went to college in the early 2000s or the 90s or the 80s, like what you learned in college is not going to serve you at all anymore in 2025. In fact, one of the things I used to do for AF Marketing is I used to host these events for young students because we'd get so much interest in our internship program. And I used to host this course called College is Broken. Because even 5-10 years ago, I thought it was. Because all these kids are like, I studied marketing and they come to me and they don't know how to write copy. They don't know how to set up a lead magnet. They don't know what Zapier is. They don't know what a CRM is. They don't know that they'd be responsible for management of all of those different items. But they expect to come apply for a job with me so that I can teach them what to do. That's not how this works. So I think people are going to continue to get angry that they're going to have to evolve in a really meaningful way to continue to stay competitive, unlike any other generation has done before. And so with that, I think next year, we're going to see a little bit more stability in things like interest rates, mortgage rates. I think we're going to kind of level out on the tariff conversation. I think that the labor conversation will start to level out, and then we're going to be at a new normal for like, this is how much it costs for a gin sour. This is how much it costs for a Chipotle bowl. And I think that we're going to see more people feel disenfranchised if they haven't been given the life skills on how to stay competitive and continue to evolve, how to adjust their spending or make more money as things get more expensive. The number one thing that I'll say in group chat, my favorite podcast, they talk about this all the time, is that if you are participating in the wealth creation that's happening in the United States, and to do that, you need to be buying into the S&P 500 or whatever it is, you're sitting pretty, baby. You're having a great year. And most people are not participating. And then they're pissed. So my thing on 2026 is that I think things are going to even out a little bit. I really do think things are going to even out economically. But I think from a money culture perspective, boring portfolios are going to be sexy again. I think people are going to shift from hustle bragging around Bitcoin and run-ups on GameStop and all of this crazy stuff that people are doing with like JP Morgan, all, whatever. No, it's over. Like we are not sitting at home with nothing to do anymore. We got to be out in the world creating value, but we want our money to be working for us. So that boring portfolio, that stability is king. Cash flow clarity, having real assets, disciplined spending, and then moving away from headline reactivity and more about creating a framework to take advantage of the growth of our country over the long term is going to be the better play. So if you're looking at this as a prediction, and my prediction is that I think things are going to calm down a little bit next year as it relates to the economic headlines and the tariffs and the scare tactics and all the things. Number one, it's calming down for me already because I don't listen to the headlines anymore. I think we're going to have a lot of headlines in politics. I'll get to that in a little bit. However, what you can do to hedge against this is to be money planning for next year. Oldmoneypodcast.com/moneyplan. That's going to give you your money planner so you know where your money is going, how much is coming in, what you need to do to pay off your credit cards, what you need to do to save, invest, etc. I think people who are in a massive amount of credit card debt are going to fall even further behind because although their interest rates might go down slightly, the cost of living is going to go up even more. And so if you're trying to pay down debt while the cost of living goes up, I would suggest taking that pain for a short amount of time, getting super diligent about paying that off so that you can live within your actual means, get rid of that debt, and start fresh without having to file for bankruptcy. I think that we need to make sure that we're setting a really good example for our children. What does it mean to be financially literate? What does it mean to be financially responsible? What are you modeling for your children around these adjustments? Are you being reactive and negative? Are you having a really positive mindset and taking personal ownership for where you can show up and learn and do more? And last but not least, are you going to participate in a meaningful way or are you going to sit at home and complain? The boring portfolio is sexy. If you need help setting it up, Everything's ready for you in Old Money Method. I literally walk you through how to set up a money machine so that you can save your money, pay off your debt, be in control of your investing in a way that doesn't make you a day trader, doesn't make you crazy, but it allows you to benefit on the coattails of all the other great stuff that's happening in this country, even if it's for this very moment, just NVIDIA. Number three and number four kind of relate to each other, but I'm going to start in the positive way of number three, which is kind of about the emotional climate and like how people are treating family. I think there's kind of a big return to traditional family values. We've seen the pendulum kind of swing in a way. But I think what's going to be interesting is that people are hunkering down as the world feels a little crazy to their families, and home is becoming the new private club again. I think that hosting comes back as like a core social flex. Like people are into tablescaping and candlelight and making their home really beautiful. Like if you don't follow Nabella on TikTok, she is my favorite follow. She is just the most beautiful, elegant, her home. Oh my God. It's hospitality porn. I'm literally obsessed with it. But also what we're seeing, and Gensler is one of the biggest architecture firms in the world. I was reading a report from them. They say that workplace and design forecasts are pointing towards hospitality inspired social spaces and a broader human connection correction. I think the pendulum swung from everybody's at home and isolated during COVID to, oh my God, we can go out and party. Let's go to Ibiza. Let's go to Mallorca. Let's go to wherever. And now it's kind of coming back to the other side of like, okay, we kind of went crazy and did our thing. And now we're at the end of the cycle where we want to be hosting and having really meaningful connections with people in our homes, in the places where we feel really safe and secure. It's almost feeling like all the private clubs in New York are getting played out already and there's just too much access. We saw this overexposure with like Soho House and the pullback to more of an intimate curated group of people. I think we're seeing a lot of the same things at Zero Bond, Casa Cipriani. Like people want to be around their people. And I know that sounds elitist and snobby, but the reality is that Taylor Swift wants to enjoy her glass of Chianti with nobody bothering her for an autograph with her dude, right? Like, I think that we're allowed to want for that. And I think that the return to curated social experiences, something that's cozy, something that's hosting intimate groups, is really going to be restorative. And I think it also ties into number four prediction, which is this trad wife tradding will continue. There was just this huge women in the workplace study that came out, and I was listening to this interview with Sheryl Sandberg, who was, I don't know what she still does now, but she was the chief operating officer of Facebook. And she wrote that book, Lean In, about like how women need to lean into the workplace. Well, unfortunately for her, the Women in the Workplace report shows that women are leaning the fuck out. They're continuing to leave the workplace. They are not interested in fighting in corporate America for these traditional career tracks. They're fucking done. And I get it. I have been saying that we are in this post-girl boss renaissance era where we all fucking girl bossed way too close to the sun, and now we're coming back down to earth. And I think that the overtaxation of women's minds and energies is having them swing back to wanting to leave the workplace and come back to a traditional family structure. And not in the fact that the trad wifing of like, I wanna give all of my power over to men, I wanna like forego any creative or individualistic pursuits. No, I think women are drawing the line in the sand of, this does not work for me, and I will work on my own terms. Not hustling, girl bossing, and trying to like flex numbers online as an online business owner, but I think we're going to see a lot more people own their own time and schedules to suit themselves, and they should, by the way, so that they are able to give their attention to where they want to give their attention. And so this Women in the Workplace report was showing that women wanted to give their attention to their young children, as they should if that's what they want to do. But I think they're stopping to playing the games with men and trying to keep up with men who have the exact same hormonal output every single day of the month, where we are a different woman 28 times in a month. Do you know what I mean? I think that this shift back towards flow, towards rhythm, towards living your life with your family and making that a priority is becoming more important than climbing the corporate ladder, than having this big girl boss career. Even in some like microclimate ideas, like if you ever follow Manifestation Babe, Catherine Zinhina, she's doing that right now. And she's walking us through what that's been like for her to kind of turn off her business involvement and focus more on her family, both her child and her extended family. She shares a lot about that on her podcast. We're seeing that with the dichotomy between the Kourtney Kardashian and the Kim Kardashian, which is like Kourtney's like, you know, making excuses so that she can breastfeed her, I don't even know how old he is, child anymore, and like leaving family events. And Kim Kardashian's basically not home with her kids so she can pursue acting and law and all these things. And it's like neither of them is right, but they're somewhere in the middle where you got to find a middle ground. So this Women in the Workplace report, I think, was very illuminating to the fact that I think that women are done with the bullshit. They're done with the bullshit. And I'm going to put this in the Old Money Monthly newsletter, but there is an incredible, incredible, incredible podcast episode from the episode Diabolical Lies, which is hosted by Katie from Money with Katie, and then also a woman named Caroline. I don't really know. I follow her on TikTok, but I don't know her last name. Apologies. It's such a good look. Such a good look at just the gender politics around MAGA and womanhood and tradwifing and how society has just set up women to suffer through all of this puritanical ideology, and just the way that we have to function in the world is a fucking lift. Now, this is a very dense podcast. It's not snacky like Old Money. I had to like slow it down and like really digest it, but it is a very good look at just women in society today. And this is one of the reasons why I think that that family structure, being at home, hosting at home, we're swinging back towards that. And quite frankly, as a Cancer myself and somebody who loves to be home, I'm 100% here for it. Okay, item number 5, this one, now we're getting into some of the fun stuff too. All about wellness, beauty, and the body. I think that the body is status in a way that it has never been before. I think that as we go into 2026 and beyond, wellness and health are going to become the biggest luxuries and such an incredible source of expenditure for the everyday American. Now that everybody has access to GLP-1s and peptides, they're also going after exosomes and perfect skin and traveling to Korea for all the treatments and all the things. The thing is, and bodybuilders have always said this, is that the one thing that money can't buy or nobody can take away from you is your physique. So I think that while everybody can have the perfect face and the perfect nose and the perfect unwrinkled forehead, what's actually going to signal status is going to be discipline and dedication. We're already seeing that of the biggest flex for the Pilates girls. It's like, I go to Solid Core 5 days a week or whatever it is. And that is their signal. And the signal is value. Like, I'm a person who is dedicated. I am a person who is able to follow through on a goal, because the reality is now GLP-1s, like, it cuts all of that dedication away. So just being thin is not necessarily as big a flex as it was of you if you lost a lot of weight. People, I think, look at it like, oh, you kind of had a cheat code, which, okay, maybe they did. That's totally fine. But now these ways that you can signal dedication and discipline are going to be a little bit more nuanced, like that Solid Core membership or having that, I guess there's this, like if you go to 10 classes during December, you get like a Solid Core hoodie or something like that. It's what Orange Theory Fitness used to do. Orange Theory Fitness used to have like a Hell Week t-shirt where if you completed 3 workouts during Hell Week, you got a Hell Week t-shirt. And it was very like gauche and, you know, Orange Theory Fitness branded, like not my style. I think the wellness is getting a little bit quieter. I think it's getting a little bit more clinical. And I think we're going to see people utilizing all the science that's out there, the peptides, the exosomes for the perfect skin, the perfect body, etc. But the signals are going to be about wellness and biohacking is my identity. I think we're going to see that be people's identity so much more. And the way that we all kind of mocked this Brian Johnson guy that's doing that experiment to live forever, I think more and more younger women are going to get even more into this. I also think that things that are quote unquote more natural options like exosomes, which are derived from your own body, or PDGF or PRP, which is like platelet-rich plasma, or Sculptra is even being kind of passed across as like more natural because it's a biostimulator. It's not a hyaluronic acid filler. I think we're going to see this signaling towards quote unquote more natural or safer options. And I also think there's going to be a massive focus on nervous system wealth, like sleep hygiene, low stimulation routines, slow girl era, fewer like extreme, like I was saying, like fewer Orange Theory Fitness. Like Orange Theory Fitness, I haven't been a member there in years. They call me all the time. They are desperate to get my membership back. But like that is not the trend. People are not really going towards that. They're going towards the solid core and the Pilates studio and the heated Pilates and all the things that are centered on well-being and their operating system and your nervous system and all of the regulation, natural things that require discipline and kind of a little bit of suffering if we're being really honest. So for 2026, expect more of that. Expect more wellness influencers. Expect more holistic type of approach on things, more natural ingredients, less of like taking pre-workout junk that's just chemicals, and more focus on living well and using your body to signal status because now you can buy everything. Actually, side note, something that Heather McDonald recently said on her podcast was they were talking about Pamela Anderson. This perfectly proves my point. They're talking about Pamela Anderson in the 1990s and why she was such a bombshell. And it was because she was born looking that way. She was born with the blue eyes. She was born with the cute button nose. She was born with the perfect face and the beautiful smile. Obviously, the rack was enhanced. However, that's where surgery allowed us to go in the 90s. But her face was gorgeous. She was just like a girl next door. And that's one of the reasons why people were so crazy about her. Whereas now, anybody can get a Pamela Anderson face. So it's kind of like a dime a dozen, meaning that that face is no longer so special. The big rack is no longer so special because it's ubiquitous. Everybody has access to it. So that's what I mean when I think the body as status. It's like showing you going to the Tracy Anderson method. People are showing off the vascularity in their legs after a workout. Like it's about the commitment and the hustle around the fitness and the dedication because you are working hard for it and you're going to signal to other people that you're superior or elite because of it. Does that track? Okay, thank you. Item number 6 on my list is the one that I'm the most excited to talk about. I've been thinking about this all year. This trend that is coming for 2026 is already here. And I first heard about this from Joe Rogan many years ago, not a podcast I listen to much anymore, but he had made this point, I'm thinking like 10 years ago when I used to listen to him, that the internet was going to be the great equalizer because it was going to make everything completely transparent. You cannot hide from the internet anymore. Bad behavior cannot be hidden. And the biggest example of this year was the Coldplay couple. You went with your mistress into a public place or your mister, I don't know how you call the guy that you're cheating with, whatever. You guys are both in relationships. You got caught in a public place and you paid the consequences for your bad behavior publicly. And I don't know if you saw this, but the woman that got caught in that Coldplay couple just did this article with maybe it was the New York Times, which by the way, I don't want to hear her side of the story, but she basically was like ripping on Gwyneth. She was like, I really liked Goop and I thought Gwyneth was a girl's girl. And then she went and did that astronomer commercial that embarrassed me. I lost respect for her. We don't care that you lost respect for Gwyneth, honey. We all lost respect for you first when you were caught cheating and being inappropriate with somebody that you work for in a public place. Like you cannot hide. Transparency is the great equalizer. And then you pay the price. If you guys haven't seen the woman who fucking lost it at a San Francisco restaurant this weekend, first of all, you need to find it on the internet. It was the night of SantaCon, which is an obnoxious yet very popular trend and thing that people do in December in San Francisco and other major cities. And there was this woman in a restaurant in Coal Valley, which is a very like neighborhoody vibe, a very chill place. Her and her boyfriend were wasted. I'm talking blackout, obliterated. And apparently, according to all of the observers and participants, they cut her off and she was trying to go back behind the bar to make her own drink. Ew. Then when they were setting boundaries with her, she started to assault the restaurant workers. She was hitting and punching people and being, of course, really loud and angry, yelling at them, filming the whole thing. She was filming. And then they start to take her out of the restaurant. And this other, she starts to get like rough with people. This random like blonde chick actually judo slams her onto the ground, like body slams her onto the ground. There are all these guys, the restaurant workers are wrestling her and her husband out of the restaurant. They get them to the door, the whole restaurant like erupts in applause, like get these loud ass annoying people out of here. And then they're out on the street and the sidewalk and she's yelling and she's fighting. She's being aggressive. The boyfriend's being aggressive, whatever. And I think somebody took her phone and threw it down the sidewalk. So she's being held back by all these men. Then they throw the phone or something and they like let her go and she starts to run. And somebody, I think it was the bartender, sticks his leg out and fucking sideswipes her, trips her, like trips her, dude. And she goes splat, splat, right onto the fucking ground, like running full speed, splat. And that very same night, I saw the TikTok going viral. And I said to Justin, this is going to make national fucking news. Just watch. And it sure did. TMZ picked it up. People have been talking about this everywhere. She lost it at a San Francisco restaurant for being so wasted. Monday morning, she wakes up. Not only is she probably still hungover, not only is she probably so sore from being body slammed and then going splat on a sidewalk in San Francisco, she was fired. That's right. She was fired from her job. She worked for the running app company Strava, and she was let go because her behavior was, first of all, captured on film. Number two, it was obviously her, easy to identify. People called her out for her behavior towards her boyfriend, towards the staff in the restaurant, just all of it. And she was punished. And so the transparency, you just can't hide your bad behavior. And if you're acting that way in public, it's going to come back and get you. Even from the political perspective, the Epstein list and everything that's getting released or not getting released or it's getting redacted or the photos or whatever, it's like, I mean, we're not surprised. We knew all these guys were scumbags. We knew they were all disgusting. We knew that they were all criminals. Like, we're not surprised, but it's finally just coming to light now. It's kind of irrefutable. Do you know what I mean? It's also this transparency about the way that people can share their knowledge about other people, their experiences. The Virginia Guffrey, I think that's her name, she's one of the Epstein survivor victims, and her coming out and being brave enough to share her story about how disgusting these people were to her and how she basically got trafficked and abused and all the things, it's just all out there. There's nowhere to hide. In addition to that, just taking it away from the really dark side of everything, it's things like the Forbes 30 Under 30 list. Like, that used to be such a big deal maybe 10 years ago, and it really was crowning these young entrepreneurs as so amazing. And now everybody knows you pay to get on the list. It is a pay-for-play PR moment. It's like an advertorial. I actually know a couple of people who have been on the list, and I've seen them campaigning for it. I've seen them like hustling for votes and doing the thing, and then they got on the list. But like now you can literally just pay for placement. That's how that kind of stuff works. And so the more that people share, especially on TikTok and in just like their personal accounts of how the sausage is made in everything in the world, from bad behavior in a restaurant, which again was a first person account in video of this woman being a fucking nightmare that gets posted online, you can't hide from it. The Epstein list, you can't hide from it. Like, it's coming to get you. The Coldplay couple, you were caught. It's going online. We all saw it. Or as Camille Grammer says, like, now we said it and now it's out there and now you have to deal with the consequences. So generally speaking, I think everything's going to get more and more transparent. I think that there isn't a way to hide from bad behavior. And I also think it poses a risk because as things get more and more transparent, I think people are going to, well, how do I want to say this? I think that it gets sketchy because people, when things get transparent, they get villainized by groups of people for like where they give their political donations or things of that nature. And that can be really sticky. My point is just like, be aware. If you're liking, like, tell your man that if he's liking a girl's picture that's in a bikini and you go to that girl's picture, you can fucking see that he liked it. Like, people need to be aware of this stuff and they just act like they can do whatever they want to do without people finding out. So like, that ain't the world anymore. Anyway, okay, let's go to number seven. Number seven is all about skills and careers and adaptation. As I already said, I don't think people are adapting fast enough. I don't think people are taking initiative to evolve their skill set in the market. And the ones that are winning are the ones that are doing that. For example, after COVID, we saw a whole bunch of nurses be so burnt out from the trauma that was COVID, rightfully so, and pivot to wellness boutiques or aesthetics to get out of that. And what happened is that we lost a lot of really talented nurses that we needed in those high stakes situations. We are also seeing corporate employees who got burnt out, who were overachievers, got worked to the bone, taken advantage of, leaving corporate to become consultants. And they can be consulting for the companies they used to work for a lot more money, owning their schedules, owning their businesses, and having all the benefits there. Also, for example, in the teaching industry, we're seeing a lot of teachers complain about not being paid enough. And I agree, they're not paid enough. And we're also seeing teachers who are evolving and showcasing their work as a teacher on TikTok. They're making, I don't know, templates or worksheets or resources for other teachers and selling them on Teachers Pay Teachers. I think that's the site. And they're crushing it. They're making more money selling resources and getting brand deals as a teacher than they are from being a teacher. And yeah, it is more work. Yeah, you don't get to just be a teacher anymore and live the life of your dreams on a salary that doesn't match them. It is more work. It does cost more to buy a house. But to separate yourself, you have to move differently. I think this is the same thing. It's like why I have my business and this podcast and how we're moving in the world now is going to separate the successful people from the people that complain and feel disenfranchised. So people are moving and adapting, and the ones that are making it work for them are going to make it work for them. And the people that sit back and complain are never going to get ahead. I think the flex in corporate is about being hard to replace because the skills that you have can't be replicated from AI, whether that's a great coach and mentor, a great negotiator, a great manager, leader, not necessarily highly visible, not necessarily needing the title, but knowing that you can really make an impact on the overall productivity, your bottom line, or whatever it is in your company, that's how you become a protected employee because you are irreplaceable. And as they say, everybody's replaceable, but like if you really bring a lot of leverage to your role because you're doing more, you will stay. And I'm sorry that you don't get to just do what's on your job description. If you want to stay competitive in your business, like if you're not growing year over year in my business, like I'm sorry, I don't have a path to pay you more. You want to get paid more, you got to grow. I'm growing. I'm bringing in more business. I'm developing my leadership skills. I'm studying and doing all the things that I need to do for the craft or for the leadership or for the business. I'm investing tens of thousands of dollars a year in support and strategy to continue my education as a business owner. So if you work for me, you have to figure out a way to continue to invest in your education, add more value to the company. And guess what? For me, if you work for me and for most company, if you find something that's valuable that you can do as a skill and it costs money and you want to learn it, I'll fucking pay for it. So whether it's learning AI or optimizing systems, improving whatever it is that you're doing, or you're just acting in your own best self-interest to give yourself more income streams, this next few years is going to separate the winners from the losers. And I don't mean loser in like a negative term. I mean the ones who are not going to get ahead and the ones who are going to be above and beyond. Like everybody still says like podcasting is saturated. TikTok is saturated. You guys, there's still room for you. There is a need for your voice. You have to get out there and participate. And if you let some lie about things are oversaturated stop you from getting started, you're never going to get ahead. So I think that the people that are looking for opportunities are thinking entrepreneurially, who are continuing to innovate and grow and adapt, not because they're done with school because they did college 15 years ago and they don't want to do it again. And I'm not talking about traditional college paths. I'm talking about like, are you studying? Are you getting more dangerous in your role? You will survive. You will thrive. I don't think if you're going to just sit around and spin on TikTok all night long every single night that you're going to advance in your career the way that you think you deserve to. And the next point that I have is number 8, and it's all about the creator economy and the media. And it goes perfectly with what we just talked about, but the creator economy is going to continue to grow, but only for the select few. I think now it's going towards quality over quantity. So highly produced videos, a unique point of view. You can't make it by just doing a get ready with me and hoping people listen to your boring ass day if you don't do anything with your life. People were following Alex Earle and tuning in to her Get Ready With Me's because she was partying so hard and taking you behind the scenes of all these parties at University of Miami or then into Dancing with the Stars drama or whatever. She has a really strong lifestyle that supports wanting to sit with her and knowing what's going on behind the scenes. But if you want to be a creator, you've got to add value. And maybe that's aspirational value or inspirational value or educational value or just lifestyle, fun, like entertainment value. You need a unique value proposition. You need high production value. But if you start to create, it is not hard to make money. I know it's work, but it's not hard because you can start getting brand deals. You can start getting gifting. You can start getting commissionable links. Like there's so many ways to get started. You just have to get started. And I think that our new form of entertainment is the one-to-one creator economy. I just don't think we're going to be influenced by commercials anymore. I mean, we're not. We skip over them. We don't listen. We are taking recommendations from the people we build relationships with on social media. And so why can't that be you? If you are a teacher in a school, why can't you speak to other teachers that are out there about what it is you're going through and then make recommendations for the way that you run your classroom? Or if you found a really cute outfit at Nordstrom Rack or whatever and make it a commissionable link, why can't you do that? You can, you totally can. So I think the creator economy is going to continue to grow. If we look at the way that kids are answering how they want to or what careers they want when they grow up, when I was growing up, everybody wanted to be like a teacher or an astronaut or whatever. And now kids want to be YouTube stars or TikTokers. So things are changing. And this dovetails into number 9, which I think is so important. Children, education, aspiration, all the things. Like, what are we doing with our kids? If your kid wants to be a YouTube creator, if your kid wants to be a content creator, are you giving them any resources to achieve their goals? Are you putting them in video editing classes? Are you teaching them storytelling and cinematic language? Are you exposing them to great directors and film styles? I just think that the way that parents can influence their children's success is so incredible, and the opportunities are so unbound now with just how much information is out there. And if you can work with your kid and build with your kid and build a life with them of allowing them to be creative in this new way, I think it's so interesting. Now, old money thesis is that we all inherit something from our parents, right? We might inherit a trust fund. We might inherit money trauma. We might inherit bad habits. You might be a shopaholic like your mom was, right? I think what's really interesting when we look back is that no matter what type of influence we have on our kids, we will influence them, good or bad. So I think now parenting includes preparing kids for the reality of the new world. And if you're feeling disenfranchised and left out of the growth of the AI bubble and you're not doing anything for yourself and you're just complaining, your kids are going to pick up on that same mentality. And this is a really great opportunity to remember that we're all being watched. I don't even have kids, but I know I'm being watched by my godchildren, by our nieces and nephews. Like, how I be matters. It matters not just for the kids in my life, but for the influence we have on others. So when we think about the way that we show up and the way that we have the opportunity to evolve and be resourceful and entrepreneurial, that's a really important skill to be passing down to our children. I was just watching this clip on TikTok about how Steve Jobs did not let his kids have iPads because he knew that they would be consumed by the technology in their house. And this was confirmed by a biographer who was writing his biography. There was not only no screens, but the conversations that they were having at the dinner table were about art and about history and about ideas. And I talk about this a lot in Old Money is, depending on how the conversations went at your dinner table, the conversations could have been like, oh, we're so stressed about money. No, we can't go on vacation this year. Work sucks. Everything sucks. The economy sucks. Everything's hard. Gosh, did you see what our neighbors? They just got a new car. Must be nice. All that language that we grow up around, we start to embody. And now we're getting older and wiser. And we're like, oh shit, we got a lot of programming that we could probably get rid of, right? And so when we think that way about how we're programming our kids and ourselves, by the way, our kids are just kind of an excuse to analyze and be reflective of how we be. But everybody online is saying the trend, and I agree with this, is that there's going to be a big division between the thinking class and the consumer class. And I don't just mean about consuming goods and services. I mean consuming content versus thinking and creating new ideas and doing things like a TikTok account or having a point of view or responding critically to culture. Diabolicalize, that podcast, I'm telling you, is like one of the best executed podcasts that really dives into the intellectual nature of examining how our life is right now. And I think that that is a skill that is getting lost. I think that we can have our kid dream about being a YouTuber and have them sit in front of YouTube and watch videos all day and say, I could do that, versus putting them in a class and teaching them Adobe Premiere Pro, or supporting them in taking a dance class so that they can be the next Charli D'Amelio or whatever it is. They can go move their body. Are you going to be a doer, a thinker, an instigator, an entrepreneur, or are you going to be a consumer? I really do think that we are at this inflection point where those gaps are going to grow even wider. As Justin always says, we're in a K-shaped economy, meaning that the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And it's not just about money. It's about access and ideas and opportunity for sure. But that's becoming more democratized. Everybody has access to YouTube. Everybody has access to the internet for the most part. Everybody has access to Reddit and to books and to Libby and to all the things. So now if everybody has access to everything, it's like, what are you going to do with it? So when we talk about children, we talk about education, we talk about aspiration, I think that now is really the time to say, what is it that I want to create for myself? And where can I take ownership around the skills that I need to build in order to do so? Okay, the last thing that I have on my list to talk about today is kind of the political climate and law and order. And I think what's really interesting, and I don't have a solid prediction for what's going to happen to our two-party system, but it's a big old fucking mess. I see some things happening that make me feel really positive. For example, San Francisco is really turning a corner. We have a great mayor in San Francisco. His name is Daniel Lurie. He does an amazing job on social media and getting people excited about living in San Francisco again and being proud to be there. But the thing that he did as the leader is that he restored law and order. He started enforcing shoplifting laws, which before they stopped enforcing that. Remember, you could basically steal anything under $900 and get away scot-free. They weren't going to prosecute you. That's why we had all these crazy robberies and all these things, and still a problem in LA massively. But essentially the philosophy around that was, okay, the people that are resorting to crime are already from marginalized communities, and they've already had it so tough because they've been, you know, discriminated against, or they didn't have the same opportunities as other people. So we shouldn't punish them further for committing crimes against our citizens, which is absolutely the same thing what I mentioned in the kind of career area, which is when an overachiever gets taken advantage of by always overgiving at the workplace, at some point they fucking break and they say, you know what? I'm done here. I'm not going to work for anybody else. I'm only going to work for myself on my own terms. So I'm out. Bye. You took advantage of me. And I think that's what's happening in California. I think Californians are like, you know what? We're done with people not being punished. We're done with these gangs coming in and literally casing houses in the wealthiest neighborhoods in LA and waiting for people to be gone at work during the day. They're flying drones over people's houses. People are having to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars as a community a year for just private security. I think people are fucking done. And I think law and order is going to begin to be restored in a very meaningful way. And I think it's going to be one party, the Republicans, that are going to do that and hold higher standards around things like law and order, which are now starting to affect people's day-to-day lives in a very meaningful way, whereas the Democrats have not positioned themselves and have actually argued against enforcing laws because of these marginalized communities, and it just hasn't worked. The Democrats have failed their constituents. And of course, the Republicans have failed the Republicans as well. I mean, they've been running on moderations and then doing these extreme activities like the immigration raids with the masked ICE agents. Don't even get me started on how much that upsets me. But I think what we're getting back to is honestly what we need out of our leadership, which is law and order. And we need people who are focused on the day-to-day living of their constituents, not on their next political run, Gavin Newsom. I think the mayoral election in LA in 2026 is going to be incredibly important. I don't know if Rick Caruso is going to run again for mayor, but I hope he either does that or runs for governor of our state, because I find him to be a very moderate, very strategic thinking person who's not from a political background, who's a businessman. And I really would like to see some leadership there and just think about what it would have been like. And this might be too inside baseball or niche, but like if, you know, when all of the fires happened earlier this year in January in LA, we had Karen Bass as the mayor of LA, and she mishandled the thing from start to finish. I mean, she really fucking did. And also there was so much mismanagement of the lands in LA even running up to that. Think about what it would have been like if we had Rick Caruso, who is a real estate developer, in the position to help people rebuild their homes in the most efficient way possible. He would have known exactly what to do. I don't know. I just feel like the pendulum is swinging. And so this isn't pro or against or for either political party, because I hate both of them. I don't like very many people in politics, but there are a few that I do. Daniel Lurie, there is Rick Caruso. I think there is a cream is rising to the top, and I think we're all getting fed up and we're going to demand more accountability from people on the local level, from leaders on the local level. And if you are not yet involved in the local politics of where you live, I'm very passionate about it. I think it is the best thing that we could do to be activated, engaged, and critical of the people that are leading our cities and towns, and wondering if they're serving us or serving their own political aspirations. So my prediction for 2026 is that we will start to see a return to law and order. We're already seeing that in some major cities. I hope that we have a governor who will step in and support and enforce that happening in other cities in our state, because right now our governor is just focused on running for president and doesn't want to ruffle any feathers and enforce anything. He just wants to serve his own needs. And quite frankly, same as it goes with my transparency prediction number six, I think that's over. I think we're done with that. I think we're fucking fed up and we don't want it anymore. So those are my 10 predictions for 2026. I think that this covers everything in culture. I mean, we went through like aesthetics and travel, lifestyle, fashion, went through economics, labor, cost of living, emotional climates, and coming back to the home. We talked about workplace, gender, family structure, trad wifing or girl bossing. We talked about wellness and the body as a status signal. Talked about transparency on the internet and responsibility. We talked about skills and adaptations in your career, a creator economy, the media, children, education, aspiration, and now the political climate. I think I covered absolutely everything. This has been an incredible, incredible, incredible year for me, for AF Marketing, for Old Money. And I just cannot say thank you enough to everybody who has been on this journey with me of exploring the culture of money and diving deeper into our own psyches and our programming and our ideas and challenging them and being intellectual but having fun and keeping it light but being really real. And so my shout out today goes to every single rich girl who has pressed play and rich guy. Press play, who's press subscribed, who has been a part of this, who has listened to 1 minute of the show. This is my passion project. This is the thing that I'm so grateful that I want to do. This is a dream realized. I wanted to be a podcaster, and there was a time in my life where I wasn't a podcaster, and I wanted that for myself, and I took the leap, and it's through the grace of God and all of your support that I'm still here doing this with energy and verve and enthusiasm and excitement for what this next year will bring. So thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for an incredible 2025. I hope that this next year for you is filled with expansion and wealth and love and joy and everything that it is that you wish for yourself. And if there is anything that I can do to support you on your journey, whether it's personally or a topic you want to talk about, a shout out that you want on the show in 2026, I am here for that. This is not a one-way street. This is us doing a dance all the time of moving through this world in community so that we can get the most out of it and live our most expansive, amazing, wealthiest lives ever. I love you so much. Happy New Year. And I will talk to you in 2026.